Welcome to the Food Revolution Summit, where we explore how you can heal your body and your world with food. This is Ocean Robbins, and I am joined by my dad and colleague, John Robbins, in welcoming our guest, Dr. Daniel Amen. Dr. Daniel Amen is a child and adult psychiatrist, a 12-time New York Times best-selling author, and founder of Amen Clinics. With 8 clinics across the United States, Amen Clinics has conducted more than 160,000 brain scans on patients from 121 countries. Dr. Amen's research team has published more than 70 scientific articles on his work. Discover Magazine named his research as one of the top 10 stories in science for 2015. Dr. Amen has also hosted 14 popular public television shows about the brain and is regarded as a gifted teacher. His new book is The End of Mental Illness. So now, Daniel, we are so grateful for this time with you. And now for the interview, I'm going to hand it over to my dad and colleague, John Robbins.
Well, thank you, Ocean, for that introduction. And thank you, Daniel, for being with us once again.
Such a joy to talk to you again.
Well, we're delighted to have your voice and your message and your spirit in our summit and reaching our audience. The numbers of people today who are suffering from conditions like depression and anxiety and bipolar disorders and addictions and PTSD and ADHD are skyrocketing. But the standard treatments haven't changed much in the last 40 years, and success rates in treating those conditions have barely improved in all that time. Daniel, can you discuss with us for a moment the new hope for those suffering from these kinds of conditions?
Well, the title of my book, The End of Mental Illness, is just so important because what it says is the paradigm we're working on, making diagnoses based on symptom clusters with no biological information, is just not working. And we need a completely different paradigm. And what we've been doing at Amen Clinics the last 30 years is we actually believe you should look at the brain before you go about changing it. And then what we've learned, the big lesson, is get your brain right and your mind will follow. So we believe we're actually not dealing with mental health issues at all. We're dealing with brain health issues that steal your mind. And this one idea just changes everything. Get your brain right and your mind will follow.
Is that why you say you hate terms like mental illness and psychiatric disorders, and maybe we should also?
I hate the term mental illness. You know, I decided to be a psychiatrist 41 years ago after someone I loved tried to kill herself. And I took her to see a wonderful psychiatrist, and I came to realize if he helped her, which he did, it wouldn't just help her, that it would help her children and even her grandchildren, as they would be shaped by someone who was happier and more stable. So I fell in love with psychiatry, but it's the only medical specialty that virtually never looked at the organ it treated. And I knew back then these are brain issues. And I hated that term. And, you know, being a psychiatrist now for 4 decades, I just can't tell you the number of people who said, I'm not going to see no damn psychiatrist because I'm not crazy. And it just hurts people. They don't want to get help because they don't want to be labeled with a stigmatizing diagnosis, but they want a better brain. I mean, everybody wants a better brain. So what if mental health was really brain health? We would completely change the conversation.
And we would eliminate the stigma, which is so important because people don't like being labeled with a stigmatizing term. We know that too much alcohol poisons the liver. Everybody knows that. We know that smoking causes lung cancer. Everybody knows that. But for some reason, we don't as readily see that brain fog and cognitive decline and dementia can be direct consequences of what we eat. Somehow we have a hard time grasping that the brain is deeply damaged by poor food choices, perhaps more so even than any other bodily system. So, Daniel, what do you say to those who have difficulty realizing that our cognitive health is inextricably linked to our overall health, and that when we eat poorly and fail to optimally nourish our bodies, our brains will suffer?
Your brain is about 2% of your body's weight, but it uses 20 to 30% of the calories you consume. It's the most expensive real estate in your body. And if you have a fast food diet, odds are you're going to have a fast food brain. There's a great study from Australia where they looked at two outer islands. One had fast food restaurants, the other did not. And what they did is they measured their omega-3 fatty acid levels and the level of depression in the population. And what they found in the island with fast food restaurants, significantly lower levels of omega-3 fatty acids, one of the most essential nutrients for your brain, and five times the level of depression. It's the food. And also another study from Australia, there is a linear correlation between the number of fruits and vegetables you eat a day and your level of happiness, up to 8, which means if you have 4 servings of fruits and vegetables, you're happier than if you had 2. And if you had 6, you're happier than if you had 4. And if you had 8, you're actually happier than if you had 6 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. So food matters. The quality of the food you eat matters to the health of your mind.
That's such an important realization. You dedicate your new book to your two nieces, who are 15 and 10, and the story you tell about what those two girls have had to go through, it's heartbreaking. But what has happened for them since you and your wife got involved and have been helping both the girls and their mother is deeply heartwarming. Daniel, I was very moved by the journey these girls and their mother have taken and by the role you and your wife have played in it. Would you mind telling our listeners this story? I think they would love to hear it.
Well, I just love these kids so much, and I dedicated the book to them. So Amelie, who's 10, and Alizé, who's now 15, they have a family history of mental illness. Schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, multiple suicides, depression, addiction, criminal behavior. But we know that genes only load the gun. It's what happens to us that pulls the trigger. And unfortunately for them, they were raised in chaos with parents who struggled with addictions, depression, and domestic violence. And about 4 years ago, Child Protective Service believed the children were living in an unsafe environment and took them into foster care where yet more traumas occurred. And at the time, my wife, Tana, was estranged from her half-sister, Tamara, who, because of the addiction, and we had no idea what was going on until we got a call from Child Protective Services, at which point I'm like, we need to get involved. And we wrapped services around the mother. And after 6-7 months, she was able to get the kids back. And then we moved them close to us. And the whole idea behind the end of mental illness. So all of us would agree these children are at a very high risk for mental illness, both genetic risk and environmental vulnerabilities. And the whole idea behind the book is, how do I end it in them and in their babies and grandbabies? And since we've been involved, the girls are happy. They're A students, they're social, they're no longer addicted to hot Cheetos. And we are putting their brains and their bodies in a healing environment. And that's what the end of mental illness is about. It's like, okay, you have vulnerable people. How do you end it? And the answer is you put their brains in a continually healing environment.
When your nieces first came under the care of your wife and yourself, they were, as you mentioned, addicted to Flamin' Hot Cheetos, and you tried to get them to read and understand the ingredient labels on the snack packages and to understand what these ingredients do to a human brain and body and to mental health. The ingredients of this ultra-processed junk food include pro-inflammatory vegetable oils, sugar, MSG, several artificial colors, and a list of chemicals that most of us couldn't even pronounce. Daniel, how did you engage with your nieces about all this, and how did they respond, and how did things go from there?
Well, the first grocery store trip was not a pleasant one for anybody, because I told them before we went in the store, I said, you know, the good news is I'm going to teach you how to eat in a really healthy, delicious way. The bad news is I'm not buying junk food. I'm not spending money on anything I think will hurt you. And so it was stressful. And this shift happened about 3 months later when we're at a lovely restaurant in Corona Del Mar near where I live in Southern California. And Alizé ordered a salad. And I was so happy for her because she became more thoughtful. And she's a super smart kid. And what I've seen, and I've seen it with a lot of teenagers in my practice, is when they know better, they tend to do better. And so just giving them the opportunity to taste what real food tastes like was just healing for them.
And wonderful. I applaud your success there. And of course, they are living the results. Your nieces are far from alone in having craved Flamin' Hot Cheetos. This is an ultra-processed food that's become a wildly popular snack. There are schools today where 8 out of 10 kids bring them to school. And there are YouTube videos uploaded by kids having contests over who can eat the most of them. And just about everywhere we go in our society today, we're offered toxic food that will damage our brains. Daniel, you've said that the real weapons of mass destruction are highly processed, pesticide sprayed, high glycemic, low fiber, food-like substances. That's a provocative statement, but I don't think it's hyperbole. I think it's literally true. Is it?
No question about it. I published 2 studies that show as your weight goes up, the actual physical size and function of your brain goes down, which should scare the fat off anyone. And with 72% of us overweight in the United States, 40% obese, it is literally the biggest brain drain in the history of our country. And we're exporting it around the world. A big part of the book is if you want to keep your brain healthy or rescue it if it's headed to the dark place, you have to prevent or treat the 11 major risk factors that steal your mind. And obesity, one of the risk factors is called diabesity, high blood sugar and being overweight. If you have that one risk factor because of the weapons of mass destruction, the diet you have, you actually have 5 of them, because being overweight lowers blood flow. That's the B in Bright Minds. Bright Minds is the mnemonic for these risk factors. You have more toxins in your body because fat stores toxins. You have lower hormone levels because fat turns healthy testosterone into unhealthy cancer-promoting forms of estrogen. And your body has more inflammation because fat cells produce something called inflammatory cytokines. And so the diet that is so poor is damaging our brains.
One of the many things that I appreciate about your work, Daniel, is that you're continually dispelling the illusion that we're simply stuck with the brain we have And you're reminding us that our lifestyle choices, and particularly our food choices, have an enormous impact on how our brains function. One of the chapters in your latest book, The End of Mental Illness, is called Food Made Insanely Simple. I think we all would like that. In it, you provide 11 Bright Minds rules, and you say that if we follow these rules, our brain health and mental health will start to improve within days. Your first Bright Mind rule is only love foods that love you back. Can you explain what the phrase only love foods that love you back means to you and why it is so very important?
So if people get this one idea, it'll go a long way to ending mental illness in you and your loved ones. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been in a bad relationship, but I have. I was in a marriage for 20 years that was just bad. And despite good intentions and going to therapy, and it just wasn't working. And when I got divorced in 2000, I'm just like, I'm never going to be in a relationship with someone or love someone that doesn't love me back. And I'm damn sure not going to do it with food. And so too often with my patients, they say things, but I love pizza and I love beer and I love cheesecake and I love cupcakes and I love ice cream and donuts. And I had this one woman, I did this huge program at Saddleback Church, one of the largest churches in the world, called the Daniel Plan. And after I spoke, one of the pastor's wives came into my office and she said, I told my husband I'd rather get Alzheimer's disease then give up sugar.
Wow.
I looked at her and I went, did you like date the bad boys in high school? Because that's like a seriously bad relationship if you think about that. And it's like, no. And over time, she sort of got the message because her mother died with Alzheimer's disease. And she's like, no, I would rather give up sugar than have that. I just don't want to be in a bad relationship with food. You have a relationship with food. And is it a good relationship? Do you eat food that serves your health or that hurts your health? And I just want to ask this one question. Is what I'm about to do, does it love me back? Is it good for my brain or is it bad for my brain? That's actually the most important tiny habit. I have a whole bunch of tiny habits in the book, but this is the most important one. If you can answer that question, is this good for my brain or bad for my brain, with information and love, love of yourself, love of your family, love of your mission, you're going to go a long way to ending mental illness.
Well, this question, is this food good for my brain, seems like such an important one. It's not the question that most people tend to ask when considering what foods they will or will not eat. The dairy industry has done a rather spectacular job in convincing us all to drink lots of milk, and they've gotten the government to advise us all to drink several glasses a day, even though it's a fact that much of the world's population is unable to produce the enzyme that's needed to break down lactose and to digest milk. When it comes to brain health, what concerns me most is that casein, the primary protein in milk, is an excitotoxin that can lead to brain inflammation and to neurodegenerative disease. Daniel, what role, if any, does cow's milk have in a diet that's designed to reverse memory loss and support clear thinking throughout the length of a person's lifespan?
There's so many issues with milk in that most of it is pasteurized. Most of it is the cows are raised with antibiotics and hormones. Most of it, the cows are depressed and angry and anxious because of how they're raised. And people don't know that when you're anxious, when you're angry, when you're depressed, there are chemicals that go with that. And if that is what the milk is being produced in, you're going to get those negative chemicals as well. Not to mention, as you said, 70% of the population does not process lactose properly. Casein, one of the milk proteins, when mixed with stomach acid, turns into caseomorphins, which actually work on the opiate centers in the brain, which is why people love cheese and love pizza. But so I just found, and this was almost 30 years ago, that I'm also a child psychiatrist in dealing with my autistic children, is that when I would take them off milk, their language would go up. I mean, sometimes it would be 50 words in a week just with that one intervention. So sensitivity, plus because of the allergy many people have to it, it quite often goes with ear infections. And so many people who had a lot of ear infections as children from a dairy allergy ended up with a lot of antibiotics, which then caused microbiome or gut health problems, which can then lead to chronic anxiety, perhaps for the rest of their lives.
That's very important to understand. Anyone who cares about children needs to know that. It goes runs against the grain of what we're taught by the government, actually, and certainly by the dairy industry. There's another story that you tell in your new book. It's about a man named Chase, who was a smart, successful young man, fresh out of college with a great job, but inside, he was suffering. Can you tell us what happened to Chase and why you chose to include his story in your book?
Well, I love Chase's story. He had struggled actually much of his life, but after he got out of college, his moods went up and down. He had a bad temper and had trouble focusing. And so he's diagnosed with bipolar disorder. This diagnosis, which I actually, is just so disturbing. It's called intermittent explosive disorder. What does that mean? It means you explode intermittently. And it's like, it doesn't tell you one thing that causes it. When he was treated with medication, over the next year, he gained 80 pounds and his skin broke out and he really hated himself. And when he came to see us, his brain looked hurt and toxic. And in the book, I actually have the picture. His parents owned one of the NASCAR speedways. And he'd been racing cars since he was 5 years old. So he's racing cars, which means he's been exposed to a lot of gasoline fumes and other sort of toxic fumes. And he had several major accidents where his car would go into the wall of the speedway. And so he didn't have bipolar disorder. He had symptoms of ADHD, but it was caused from the trauma, the physical head trauma, and the toxic exposure. And so we ended up taking him off of his medication. Now, just don't do that. You need to do that with supervision. But we took him off his medication, put him on nutrients, changed his diet. He lost 80 pounds and quickly got better with just supplements and dietary interventions. I mean, stunning. And you could see his before and after scan and how healthy it was, plus before and after. In the book, you can see the picture of him. It doesn't even look like the same person.
And what happened in his life in the time that followed?
Well, what happened in his life was he got promoted at work. He had a girlfriend. His life just normalized. And he's actually currently the director of a substance abuse treatment program.
Oh, that's marvelous.
I mean, it just changed everything.
Yes,
in his life. And people don't get that when your brain works right, you work right. But when your brain is troubled, for whatever reason, toxins and trauma, they're often missed in mental health because psychiatrists never look at the brain. So how would they know to go, oh, you really have a toxic process that we have to fix? And they never look at the brain. So how would they know that those crashes into the wall are causative of his mood instability, irritability, and attentional problems.
Well, at the Amen Clinics, you and your team have performed now over 100,000 brain scans using single photon emission computed tomography. Daniel, based on what you've seen, as people become overweight or obese, and as they develop conditions like diabetes and hypertension, as so many people are doing today in the Western world, eating the Western diet, what do you see happening to their brains?
Recently, I did this. I looked at if you were normal weight, overweight, obese, or morbidly obese. And then I looked at the blood flow in 100 different areas of the brain. And the graphs are so stunning. There is a linear correlation. As your weight goes up, the blood flow and activity in your brain goes down everywhere. It's horrifying when you see it. You don't want a smaller brain. You don't want a less functioning brain. And, you know, some people go, oh, well, you're fat shaming. And it's like, no, I'm just telling you what the research shows. This isn't good for you. And when I first figured that out, I lost like 30 pounds because I'm never going to purposefully do something to damage my brain.
So you're saying that healthy diets are associated with bigger brain size, and that as we get overweight, obese, or morbidly obese, if we go in that direction, our brains begin to shrink or atrophy? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, no, it's horrifying. I actually coined the term the dinosaur syndrome, big body, little brain. You're going to become extinct. And when I first thought it up, I'm like, don't ever say that out loud, because it's sort of rude. And I told my wife about the dinosaur syndrome, and she said, don't ever say that out loud. You have enough people who hate you. But then a couple of weeks later, I was in Pittsburgh at GNC. We were going to do some work together on brain health. And their marketing director was morbidly obese, which irritated me, because I've come to believe strongly, if you don't live the message of your life, you're not a good messenger. And, you know, GNC, their message is health. But I didn't say anything. I was trying to be sweet and polite. But when we went to dinner and I saw him order two souffles for dessert for the table, I couldn't stand it anymore. And I'm like, Tom, you don't want to be a dinosaur. And my wife was with me and she kicks me under the table going, you know, what's the matter with you? But Tom got very engaged in the conversation because he had no idea. And over the next year, he lost 80 pounds because he didn't want to be a dinosaur. And I've had other people lose 100 pounds, 200 pounds. One guy lost 400 pounds because he didn't want to be a dinosaur. We just have to tell people that this epidemic that we have is basically stealing the health of America.
Well, a lot of people are addicted to unhealthy foods, to high glycemic foods, to highly refined foods, to foods that don't love them back. And they think that adopting a healthier diet would be restrictive. They wouldn't be able to eat the foods they think they love. They say they love, the way they use the word love. Now, most chocolate bars are full of unhealthy ingredients like sugar and dairy and synthetic flavors. But it turns out that chocolate in its natural form is high in flavonoids, loaded with antioxidants, full of fiber, rich in minerals, and contains substances that increase serotonin and dopamine in the brain. So, Daniel, is it the processing and all the sugar and the chemicals that go into commercial chocolate that make it unhealthy? And are there forms of chocolate that actually belong in a healthy diet?
Well, actually, I own a company called BrainMD that makes two chocolate bars. One, sort of like a Hershey bar, except there's no dairy, no sugar, 9 grams of fiber, calorie smart, 140 calories, tastes great. And another one called Brain on Joy, which is chocolate and coconut. You can eat amazingly well you just have to be smart about it. You know, I often say God gave you a big brain for a reason. And you literally only have to find 20 foods you love that love you back, because we're all creatures of habit. And so I had a boy that had Tourette's, and I wanted him to be on an elimination diet. Actually, I want all of my patients all of the time to eliminate things that are bad for you. I'm not a fan of detoxes. I think you should always be on a detox. You know, why are you going to eat bad food? How does that make any sense? And, you know, my first follow-up visit with him, he looked at me and he was sad and he said, I just don't like any of the foods. And I'm like, well, is that true? And I said, the next 3 days, we're going to find 20 foods you love that love you back. And he and I are now up to 75 foods he loves that love him back.
That's beautiful. I know what happens for a lot of people is their taste buds have been hijacked. They've been eating a lot of highly processed foods, high glycemic foods, foods that have been manufactured to be convenient, and frankly, to make us crave them. They are so intensely full of salt and sugar and fat and unhealthy fats at that, that they make us crave them. In fact, the industry hires people, scientists, researchers, who they call, this is the industry term, craveability experts, to enhance the craveability of the food products they sell. Now, that sounds to me an awful lot like they are intentionally creating addictive foods. And then when we get hooked on those foods, which is likely because those foods have been designed scientifically to generate that effect in us, then we can't taste an apple. We can't taste a strawberry. We're so used to eating strawberry ice cream, which is full of artificial strawberry flavors and highly sweetened, that when we get just a fresh, beautiful strawberry, we hardly can taste it. We hardly notice it. And yet, when we stop eating the foods that don't love us back, the foods that have been designed to make us crave them, we can regain our taste buds. And then a simple strawberry, it can be ecstatic. At least that's been my experience.
No question. And in the book, I talk about the evil ruler. So there's a whole segment in the book, or section in the book, that says if I was an evil ruler and I wanted to create mental illness in America, how would I do that? And that's an evil ruler strategy. I'd hire food scientists to get the perfect crunchiness, the perfect meltiness, the perfect aroma, the perfect taste to hijack your taste bud. And they're shameless about it. I mean, just think of Lay's potato chips model. Bet you can't eat just one, which is what? They're talking about an addiction. We have to be armed, prepared, and aware to know what's going on and to protect not only our brains, but the brains of our spouses, the brains of our children, brains of our loved ones and coworkers. This is so important and so different than what our society is feeding us. I mean, you just have to turn on the television and you see the flaming hot Cheetos KFC sandwiches. And you just know that's a weapon of mass destruction.
Yes, and it's so normalized. There's so much of it. It prevails in our society. We're surrounded by it. We're surrounded by people who eat that way and have normalized it, may look at us as though we're doing something weird or strange if we don't eat the highly processed, high glycemic foods that are everywhere today. I saw research that studied the impact of diet on Alzheimer's incidence, and they listed what they consider to be the five most brain healthy foods and also what they consider to be the five most brain dangerous foods. I want to share with you their lists and get your response to them. For them, the five most brain healthy foods, the foods they found to confer significant protection against Alzheimer's and other forms of cognitive impairment, are green leafy vegetables, other vegetables, nuts, berries, and beans. And the five most dangerous foods to the brain, the foods they found led to cognitive impairment and higher rates of Alzheimer's, are red meats, butter and stick margarine, cheese, pastries and sweets, and fried fast food. So, Daniel, what do you think of their lists? And is there anything you would add or subtract?
So, I like their lists. I think rather than other vegetables, I would go colorful vegetables, because the more colors you can get, the more polyphenols and antioxidants in the food. And, you know, besides artificial dyes and sweeteners and colors, we did a blog on red dye that just exploded and went viral. And I have before and after scans on red dye. A lot of people have problems with that, along with MSG. But the big highlight would be sugar, because it's pro-inflammatory. It increases erratic brain cell firing. It's addictive and it makes you stupid. There's a study from UCLA where they gave rats a head injury. And one group of rats, they gave them a healthy diet. And 3 weeks later, they could run the maze before they had the head injury. The other group, they gave them a healthy diet plus fructose, which is fruit sugar. And 3 weeks later, the rats were still confused. It's the sugar. But what do we have on sidelines of football games? Gatorade, which is what? It's artificial colors and sugar water. And so you get a concussion, you get Gatorade, which only prolongs your healing from the concussion.
Well, you've worked with NFL players, and many of whom, sadly, have chronic trauma from the concussions that they've endured as part of their sports. What have you seen in former NFL players, some of whom really are bad, their brains are really badly damaged? Is there hope for these guys?
So I've seen 300 NFL players now. We did the first and largest brain imaging and rehabilitation study on these players. So high levels of damage. Stop lying about it. Playing football is a brain damaging sport. Own it and rehabilitate them. I mean, sort of the big headline from my study is football causes long-term brain damage. But I think most thoughtful 9-year-olds, if they understood the physics, would understand that brain is soft, skull is hard, skull has sharp bony ridges. Hit it repeatedly, you're going to have problems. But 80% of our players in our study got better when we put them on a multiple vitamin, high dose, high quality fish oil, a brain supplement that works in 6 different ways, and the right diet. So it fits with the message of the end of mental illness is get a better brain, you get a better mind. And you're not stuck with the brain you have. You can make it better.
When you mentioned multiple vitamins, I know that the Amen Clinics have published scientific studies on the impact of nutritional supplements on the brain. Are there specific supplements that you've found to be particularly helpful to optimize brain functioning?
Yes, in the book, there's a whole chapter called Mind Meds versus Nutraceuticals. And I talk about why I like supplements, you know, things like first do no harm, use the least toxic, most effective treatment. They work, they have fewer side effects, and they're less expensive. And a lot of people go, oh, but there's no science. So in that one chapter, there's 286 scientific references on, so what has A-level evidence for anxiety and stress? Ashwagandha, theanine, omega-3 fatty acids. Well, how about for mood? Omega-3 fatty acids, St. John's wort, saffron, SAMe. What about memory? Ginkgo, phosphatidylserine, alpha-GPC. There's so much good science done with supplements, but they don't teach it to doctors in medical school. I got not one lecture about it. So, you know, most of it I had to find on my own. But first do no harm. The level of side effects from supplements is dramatically less than the side effect from psychiatric drugs, all of which have black box warnings, which means the FDA has said this medication can hurt you. Now, I'm not opposed to medicine and I use it with my patients, but I'm opposed to that's the first and only thing you do.
With good reason, with very, very good reason. And Daniel, I hear you saying over and again in your different books, certainly in your new book, in the conversations that you and I have had, I hear you saying repeatedly that none of us are stuck with the brain that we have. We can make it better. And I find this to be an extraordinarily hopeful message. And I want to thank you in particular for emphasizing the role that a healthful diet plays in mental as well as physical health. I think that's been a hugely overlooked reality in our society. And I really thank you for emphasizing it, focusing on it, and reminding us of the power of it. It's been a real pleasure talking with you, as it always is. And on behalf of myself and Ocean and everyone involved in the food revolution and everyone who has a brain, I want to thank you for your wisdom, your decades of research and helping people, your caring heart, and of course, for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much. It is just great to be with you again and to support the food revolution.
We've been talking with double board certified psychiatrist, Dr. Daniel Amen, founder of Amen Clinics and author of The End of Mental Illness. Daniel, in a world in which psychiatrists are frequently ignoring the fundamental role of food in brain health, your work is informative, it's refreshing, and it is so empowering. We are grateful for your decades of study and leadership that's making a difference in so many lives. And we thank you so much for your partnership in the food revolution.
Thank you.